You're listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes, 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 yes! It hits the back of the net! Oh my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a headshot! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh, you will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
First Drogba, I know that it's difficult, and it's a strange feeling, I have to admit that, but we have to do our job. We know that he wants to do his job. Last year happened the same. I want to do my job, trying to help my team, and he was trying to do his job by scoring goals, which he did last year. But I admit, it's a strange feeling that we have to try to forget during the game.
That was Jose Mourinho as the loving begins between he, Drogba and Schneider as they prepare for Chelsea against Galatasaray tonight. Here's what Wesley Schneider had to say about tonight's event.
We won this cup together, but tomorrow it's completely different. Of course we are friends and outside the pitch, but for tomorrow... For 90 minutes, we will not be friends because it's a game. It's an important game, and that's what the game I want to win. So, but of course, I respect him a lot.
And here's a little bit of what Wayne Rooney was saying before yesterday's Champions League tie for Manchester United.
Especially at this club, you need to keep trying to get into them finals, and we want to win. So I think. The feeling you get when you actually win the trophy is incredible, and so there's no way you'd want to stop at one. You know, you want to win every year, but obviously that's impossible. But if we can go to the final, then it'd be great for us, and you know, it's an opportunity to win the trophy, so hopefully we can do that.
And also, different story, we take a listen to what David Moyes was saying after that game. After a dismal performance against Olympiacos, leaves United trailing 2-0 in their Champions League knockout stage first leg. And there's Real Madrid against Schalke on their way, as well as Dortmund dam bust their way past Zenit St. Petersburg. A 4-2 win and two strikes from Robert Lewandowski mean the Germans are in full control of their Champions League destiny. Welcome to World Football Daily. I'm Oliver the Deuce Wilson, bringing you the news and the many views from around the world of football. It's all far too nice between Drogba, Schneider and Mourinho going into tonight's game, but what would you expect? Mourinho, a treble winner with the Dutchman, and a big part of Didier Drogba's success in his career. And of course, there's only one man who's feeling a little left out of the threesome, and that is Roberto Mancini. He's been fighting back. Here's what Mancini had to say about tonight's upcoming Champions League fixture between the two.
Everyone knows that Chelsea is one of the best teams in Europe. And they won the last Europa League, they won 2 years ago Champions League. They used to play this game every year. And it's clear that for them it will be very difficult tomorrow. But we want to try to do a good job, because we play at home. We want to have another 2 weeks, good 2 weeks, that we can hope to go through, also if we know that it will be difficult.
And it's Champions League football that's going to dominate our show here today on World Football Daily, as always, and I'm going to get our guest on for the show straight away here on WFD, so we can get rocking and a rolling and dive straight into the all-important content, the meat and gravy of the show. I'm delighted to say there's a man who really puts the meat into Champions League coverage. Joining us here on WFD, probably someone who's a little happier today than most Manchester United fans, from One World Sport and various other media outlets from around the web, I'm delighted to say, joining us here on WFD, Mr. Graham Ruthven. Graham, a pleasure to have you on board, mate. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you, Oliver?
I'm very well, man. Very well indeed. I'm not a Manchester United fan, so I've got a little bit more of a smile on my face maybe than they will have today. let's get straight down to the big question that's being asked on this Wednesday. Moyes out, yes or no? Has it the scales tipped against David Moyes at Old Trafford?
I don't think they have. Obviously, it's a terrible result last night. It's one of the worst performances I've seen them put in under David Moyes, if not the worst. However, I don't see him getting sacked. I certainly don't see him walking away from a six-year contract. He's getting over £100,000 a week. He's not walking away from that. He's not giving that to charity. So I don't think he certainly will get this season. I think where you may start to really have a problem is when he gets his team in over the summer and next season when Manchester United start the season, and maybe about this time if they're doing as bad or even outside the top four this time next season, that's when I think you could possibly start to make a case that Manchester United could get rid of him. At the moment, I don't think he has much to be worried about in terms of his job security, but on the pitch, he certainly has plenty to worry about.
Great. It's incredible. I mean, I've said on a number of occasions, watching United this year has become boring. I mean, last night was beyond boring, though. It was disastrous. There's no style of play to this United team. Is that part of Moyes' problem taking over the reins, or is that part of the players' problem not responding to Moyes?
Well, I think it has to be a bit of both. I think there has to be communication from the coaching staff about what they want from the team. And at the moment, it doesn't seem like, as you say, there's much of an identity there. The one thing that struck me about Manchester United this season, and it's incredible to say it about a Manchester United team, seems to be a lack of spirit, a lack of fight about them. And that is the one thing under Ferguson, you would say, even when Ferguson had poor teams, they always had that spirit. They always had that character. And that just seems to have been lost under Moyes. Now, of course, that could be down to the fact that these aren't Moyes' players. And while, you know, a player would come into the Manchester United team when Ferguson was there, and he would be the one who'd have to prove himself to Ferguson because he was the emperor. Now it's the other way around, and that Moyes has come in. What has he achieved? He's the one who's having to prove himself to the players, and it's never really an environment that a manager can thrive in. So he needs to get his own players in. He needs to identify the players that aren't putting in the effort for him. A lot of it, I think, is down to effort and heart and for the fight. And he needs to create his own team in the summer.
But the player, I mean, the solitary player that he has brought in, and you would expect to be putting in that effort for David Moyes, Marouane Fellaini. I mean, obviously he wasn't playing last night, but in general has been one of the worst performers on the pitch for Manchester United. So what does Moyes have to do to get, and he has to get these players at the moment. He can't flush out a whole squad of United players and bring in his own come the end of the season. There's got to be a way that he can get his players on side.
Well, he's yet to find that way as of yet. He's not seemingly not communicating himself very well, and he has made a number of baffling decisions, even if they are just small decisions. One of the decisions last night was to seemingly rest Adnan Januzaj for last night's game, and not play him at all, even as a substitute. And Manchester United have now got an 11-day break. So what is he resting him for? Why is he not putting him in that arena? Because Adnan Januzaj has been one of the only bright spots of this season. I think I've not seen him put in a poor performance yet for Manchester United, and he's the only player that can say that for Manchester United this season. There's also questions about why is he bringing in, as you rightly say, why is he bringing in Marouane Fellaini for close to £30 million, and then in one of the biggest games of their season, playing Tom Cleverley there, who's really not been very impressive at all this campaign. So it's difficult to see what this thread of thought is on a lot of things. There's a lot of muddled communication, I feel, between the players and Moyes, and that really needs to change.
Now, correct me if I am wrong, but if memory recalls me, at Everton, there wasn't this many changes in terms of game after game. It was very much he had a standard set of players. There'd be the odd bit of rotation when rests and injuries cropped up. But aside from that, he was always asking to draw the last bit of guts out of each player before he'd give them a rest at United. As you say just then, we are seeing change after change after change, and surprising ones at that. It does give you the feeling that he still doesn't know the best formation and the best side, best 11 players that he wants to put out on the pitch.
That is a good point. I think at Everton he had a very settled side. You kind of knew how they would start from the back, the goalkeeper, the defence, through to the midfield, and certainly towards the end when he was playing Jelovic up front, he would be the striker. That was maybe the one position he did tend to rotate quite a bit. But at Manchester United, I mean, I wish I'd looked through the stats before speaking to you, but I'm pretty sure that the games that he's kept the same 11 in consecutive games is probably below five, certainly below five in terms of that. Mm. So he doesn't know what his best 11 is, but that I don't know if you can put too much blame on him for that, because if you look at what experts are saying and what fans are saying, I don't think they know what the best 11 is as well, and they don't know whether Manchester United should be playing 4-4-2 or 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-3 or whatever. And in the Champions League, it was even more of a problem. It was exacerbated by the fact that he can't play Juan Mata, and in the past couple of weeks, he really seems to have settled on that front four of Mata, Van Persie, Rooney, and then either Januzaj or Young or Valencia or someone on the wing. He couldn't do that last night, and he really didn't look. He didn't really seem to know what the way forward was.
And I suppose as well, there hasn't been a United player that's put in a good shift for maybe two or three games aside from Rooney, and put in three solid performances that mean they're worth keeping in the side. For United, then, going ahead of this, it's not game, set, match, is it? Olympiakos will have to handle a barrage of 90 minutes at Old Trafford, you'd expect.
You would expect that, certainly, but we've been here before. We expected that with the Capital One Cup semi-final against Sunderland, and in the end, Sunderland went through in penalties, and that barrage never really materialised for Manchester United. However, this could, in a strange way, this is really make or break time for Moyes in the Champions League, because if they go out, it'll be obviously a huge embarrassment to have gone out to a team like Olympiakos. No disrespect to them, but they are probably on paper certainly the weakest team in the last 16. Manchester United probably got the best draw they could get, and to go out to them would be humiliating. However, if they come back from 2-0 down at Old Trafford, it really could give them the boost that they need, and it could really set the narrative for the rest of the season.
What do you make quickly as well, Graham, of the comments from Robin van Persie? Players were in my space talking to Dutch television about how he didn't feel like he could operate because other players were getting in areas that he should be in, and that's where he should be thriving in. Does that highlight more a lack of playing style and cohesion between the side, or is this just van Persie growing everly frustrated after a great year under Sir Alex Ferguson last season?
I think there's no doubt that van Persie is frustrated this season. As you say, he joined Manchester United. A big part of that was to link up with Sir Alex Ferguson. And also another coach that supposedly lured him to Manchester United was Rennie Meulensteen. So those are two figures who have left Manchester United. And Ferguson, in his autobiography, says that he told van Persie that he'd be there for at least another couple years, or it might have been 3 years, actually, he told him. So Van Persie might be a little bit disillusioned, and the style of play at the moment doesn't seem to be suiting him, and certainly with Wayne Rooney kind of being anointed the main man at Manchester United now, there seems to be a lack of confidence in Van Persie. I wrote a piece, it might have been back in November, December time, but I wrote a speculative piece saying, well, maybe the rumours that Van Persie is unhappy at Manchester United are not that far-fetched after all. And I think in the last few months, you've seen that perhaps the suggestion that he could be out of the exit door at Old Trafford are not that silly after all.
Elsewhere for English clubs in the Champions League, coming up this evening, Chelsea taking on, of course, Galatasaray. There are plenty of kind of linking stories. It's all very kind of family friendly at the moment, the build up to this game. Everybody's saying Schneider loves playing under Mourinho. Mourinho loved working with Schneider and Drogba. Drogba loves Chelsea still. It's quite a bit of a loving at the moment. It's all too nice, do you think, going into a Champions League knockout game?
On the most part, it is quite nice, but as with every family, there's that that angry uncle in the corner, and that angry uncle has been Roberto Mancini, who has been saying that he built Mourinho's 2010 Champions League winning side, and we all know that is kind of rubbish from Mancini. His Inter Milan team got knocked out, I think it was the last 16 stage in 2007, 2008, so yeah, he's got a point to prove coming back to face a Premier League team and facing his old adversary, Jose Mourinho, as well.
Does it make it tougher? I mean, we're going to talk about this, I think, later on in the show, but does it make it tougher for Mancini? The fact that, you know, he's going to be of training this week in the build-up to this game with Schneider and Drogba being asked incessantly about the glory days that they experienced back under Mourinho. And Mancini's very much the new guy in this Galatasaray side anyway. Does it make it extremely tougher? And it shows that he's getting frustrated by all of this.
It does show he's getting frustrated by all of this. And I think Mancini's got a lot to live up to at Galatasaray because of Fatih Terim was such an important figure there and really a legend in Turkey as well. So he's got a point to prove in the Champions League, where he never succeeded at City or Inter Milan. He's got a point coming back to England to face a Premier League team. He's got a point to prove against Mourinho, and he's got a point to prove domestically with those who are doubting whether he can succeed Terim. So he's got a lot on his plate.
Do you expect Chelsea this evening? Are they going to try and maybe set out a stall, just hold off a potentially very aggressive Galatasaray attack in this home leg in Istanbul? Or do you see Chelsea looking to go for the jugular as we saw maybe Dortmund do last night?
To be perfectly honest, I'm not entirely sure how they will play. I think they could play either way. They certainly have the players to play a high-pressing game and dictate the pace of the game, but they also seem to have settled into this rhythm under Mourinho of playing a counter-attacking game and soaking up pressure. So it could go either way. Of course, the neutral would want Chelsea to play an attractive game and go for the jugular, as you say, like Dortmund did last night. But maybe that isn't the most effective way for Chelsea to play. We've seen them kind of get into their stride in the last few months, and that's been playing a counter-attacking game where they soak up pressure.
Now, a lot of people have been discussing Willian could potentially be a Champions League X factor for Chelsea. Of course, we've talked about Eden Hazard as well. But for yourself, do you think for Chelsea to have a credible Champions League title challenge, it's got to still happen with the strikers as well, who have been so misfitting this season so far?
That has been the one problem for Mourinho, hasn't it? Has been finding that striker to lead the line. And you look at the quality they have there, Eto, Torres and Ba, they really should have that. And those players have not really been playing to their full potential. Maybe with the exception of Eto, who's coming to the end of his career perhaps. But he still doesn't seem to have that presence up front. However, in response to your question, I still think Chelsea can put up a good Champions League challenge without that striker. I think they have enough quality in the supporting line behind the striker and Oscar and Azar and Willian and even coming from central midfield as well. Matic, I think people will find him to be a goal threat coming from midfield in much the same way Yaya Toure is for Manchester City. So I think they still have the quality there to mount a good challenge. And really, Mourinho's game is not really based around the central striker, which is fortunate for Chelsea because at the moment they don't seem to have that.
Now, we can't not talk about Real Madrid against Schalke quickly as well, Graham, because I know you're an expert on all things football, of course, and this is a really tantalising tie when you take in Real Madrid's record against German sides in the Champions League. But Schalke aren't a Dortmund or a Bayern Munich. This is a different ball game and a more comfortable one, I'd have thought, for Ancelotti.
It should be, on the face of it, it should be a comfortable game for them, a decent draw for Real Madrid and Ancelotti. And at the moment, Real Madrid are firing on all cylinders. They've gone 3 points top at the summit of La Liga, and they face a Schalke team who haven't really met their own high standards this season. However, Schalke are starting to come into a little bit of form now, and I've noticed Huntelaar's been scoring recently, and Kevin Prince-Boateng has really settled into the Schalke team, and they have some good players like Julian Draxler and they've got some quality in their team. So I don't think Real Madrid will go there and completely humble Schalke. However, there was a picture floating about on Twitter. I'm not sure who photoshopped it, but there was a picture of Cristiano Ronaldo being tied down like Gulliver by all these little Schalke players. That kind of summed it up quite well. They are very much the underdog.
For Julian Draxler specifically, this is a big moment in his career. You know, there's been a lot of talk about moves for him this coming up in this summer. And against a big side like Real Madrid on the big stage in the Champions League knockout stages, it's a good place for him to be able to put himself on a show and advertise himself around in the shop window a bit.
it is indeed. It's the perfect opportunity for him to show how good he can be. And I watch quite a bit of Bundesliga, so I know how good he can be. However, that's not to say that every football fan watches German football, and the Champions League is really the biggest stage in Europe. I have no doubt that he will be an incredible talent. He's already an incredible talent, and there are teams like Arsenal and Bayern Munich and maybe even Real Madrid in the summer who will be interested in his signature.
Graham, it's an absolute pleasure to have had a good old natter about a bit of English Champions League predictions for tonight and the look back at Manchester United from last night. We very much look forward to catching up again with you at some point this season. And of course, we hope you enjoy both the Champions League and the Europa League coming up this week before the big weekend of football continues on Saturday and Sunday, mate. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Oliver, anytime.
Cheers, Graham. Take care, man. Massive thanks to Graham there for joining us here on World Football Daily. An absolute pleasure to have a chat with him. I know Rafa was hogging him while we had our hectic schedule at the end of last year. At the end of, it was around about November, December time, I believe that was. God, it seems like such a long time ago. Raf, my memory is going. Mm-hmm. Everything just fades into when football matches took place more than anything else now. When the summer comes and there's the World Cup, that's going to be a big part of just knowing what calendar month we're in.
When you go to your archives of footballing memories, Juice, how does it happen? Do you go to an age like, oh, I was X years old when I watched, you know, this game happen? Or is it like periods of your life? For me, I do like, well, I was in high school, you know, if it was like any kind of like middle school or lower school football memories, those kind of just all blur into one. I can't really tell you much about those World Cups. I remember my housekeeper's daughter was over at our house watching Mexico play, and her kind of singing like Mexican songs while the television was going. And I was like, wow, this girl lived. Wow, she's really into this show. You know, like that's how young I was. But anyways. Like I kind of group my memories into archives and whatnot. I have several college soccer memories because I just did so much. I went to go see so many games. You know, that's just kind of how I do it. I also have my post-college soccer, which I mean is when World Football Daily came into my life really as like a job, and that was fantastic because you know you kind of get certain perks working in the industry. And so like the soccer that I took in there was just totally different. You know, the way I watched it was different. It's just that's how I archive my memories. How do you break it down?
I don't know. It all comes into who I was with and where I was when I watched it. For instance, I'll always remember the night that Chelsea beat Arsenal at Stamford Bridge in the quarterfinal of the Champions League. Because that was in 2004, because I remember I was in Greece that night with some friends as part of the end of my kind of high school work, which kind of shows, I guess, how young I am in comparative to a lot of the people that we have on the show and whatnot. So I remember that, for instance, because I remember we were in a bar just off the Acropolis watching this game, and there's a picture of us at halftime, and everybody's looking really sad because Arsenal are, you know, ahead and whatnot. And then Wayne Bridge comes back and fires Chelsea through, and we kind of had a big celebration that night. In the same way, I also remember the following night of the night. I got to watch Deportivo La Coruña put 4 past AC Milan in Greece, so that trip went downhill very quickly. but no, it was so that's kind of how I remember. It's all about where and when you were at that time. For instance, United beating Bayern in the Champions League final with the 2 late goals back in 1999, I will always remember because the yell that came from my living room almost killed our cat. Straight up, almost killed it. It was asleep in front of the fire when United got their second. The yell that came from everybody in my living room was just extraordinary. I've never seen an animal move that quickly out of the vicinity of a footballing viewing area that quickly, just because it was petrified, because it just came from nowhere. We're all expecting extra time and whatnot, and everyone's yeah. And so it's all comes down to that, really. Obviously, there's ones that kind of you remember yourself and whatnot from being there. But a lot of them are just based on who I was with, mm-hmm. what happened at the time, and the emotions kind of surrounding it. You know, I'll probably always remember the night Chelsea beat Bayern Munich, because it was, I've got a very good friend of mine from school who, you know, he's in like impossible to get in contact with. Absolutely impossible. But he has a season ticket at Stamford Bridge, and I know he goes, you know, every other week and all this kind of stuff. And, you'll see him once every 6 months or so. But that night I was able to give him a call and he picked up immediately. I was like, hello? Yeah, isn't it amazing? Yeah. And then he just started going on and on down the phone about how fantastic it was that that Chelsea had won the Champions League and stuff. So you always just remember kind of funny little things like that, I guess. And I don't know. It's interesting how the different things that people remember about different moments in sport as well. You know, some people kind of remember the smallest details. You know, I bet there's somebody that remembers more than the United goals, the chip that hit the woodwork and bounced back into Schmeichel's arms, for instance, from that Champions League final. You know, it's those little things that some people really pick up on. What little things do you pick up on when you're watching sport? You know, do you remember things like, if he hadn't made that pass or anything like that? You know, I'm sure there'll be City fans that'll be thinking, if Navas hadn't made that run down the right, we wouldn't have gone behind against Barca, for instance, from the other week. And I wonder how many people will remember that more than they remember what happened in the rest of the game. As kind of an insignificant moment that suddenly turned into a big moment in the end for City.
Sure, yeah, it's got to be. I mean, especially when it comes down to like the teams that you actually care for and are affectionate for, those kind of memories definitely do stick out for me. I mean, love when that happens, man. Sorry, I just got a little bit distracted thinking about obviously the World Cup because I also kind of just put them in between World Cup cycles, you know, like, oh, well, that was in this, you know, upcoming World Cup cycle for, you know, Brazil or South Africa, Germany, things like that. I don't know. Sorry. I got lost on a little bit of a tangent.
World Cups have
obviously
been
Champions League. There's some Champions League football going on.
There is some Champions League football going on. Just World Cups are always a little bit, they've been quite forgettable, a lot of the World Cups. You know, there are some goals that obviously stand out and whatnot, Van Bronckhorst, Maxi Rodriguez, things like that. But the World Cups in recent years have been a little forgettable to me, to be honest. You know, Germany was great. I'll always remember that night Italy beat Germany in the semi-final. But a lot of that tournament kind of goes over the head slightly. Japan and South Korea as well, you know, was a bit manic and a bit crazy. But again, nothing. There aren't too many definitive moments that stand out aside from the ones that have been kind of force fed down your throat, i.e., the Ronaldinho free kick against England and whatnot here in the UK. So it's funny that World Cups don't feature as much in my footballing kind of history as maybe they do with an older generation that remember kind of right. You know, 82 and 78 and things like that. So it's interesting to see how the perspective of World Cups has changed. Yet probably more people, I would assume, from kind of the younger generation remember things like Champions League games because that is now deemed kind of a better quality of football compared to World Cups these days. And as you say, nice link there into the Champions League action. From last night, quickly, Raf, we already discussed a lot of this with Graham anyway, but Manchester United, Olympiacos, United falling apart at the seams. Robin van Persie saying that he was getting frustrated with his own teammates. The strikers speaking.
They were playing in my zones.
Yeah. speaking to a Dutch TV channel last night, saying, "Our fellow players are sometimes occupying the spaces I want to play in," he said. "When I see that, it makes it difficult for me to come to those spaces as well. So that forces me to adjust my runs based on the position of my fellow players. And unfortunately, they are often playing in my zones. I think that's a shame." There isn't a need for Van Persie to say this in the aftermath of what is an absolutely devastating result for Manchester United fans. Losing 2-0 to Olympiacos. Again, 1-0, you'd think that'd be okay. 2-0 is getting to the embarrassing side of things for a side like Manchester United. What do you make of Van Persie kind of coming out and saying this? It seems to heap for a player just come back from injury and hasn't been in the side and maybe has lost a bit of cohesion with the squad at the moment in its new style.
For a player who missed a golden chance in, like, I think the 80th, 80...
And how much...
Somewhere 85th, maybe.
How much did that remind you of the Giroud miss on the first day of the season that everybody said, oh, Van Persie would have scored back here, back last year? That miss was almost identical, I think, to that Giroud strike. And it's quite funny that this has taken place and nobody said Olivier Giroud would have scored that.
Cheeky.
But do you think that this is unnecessary from Van Persie? I mean, it surely it adds a load more pressure on David Moyes.
Without question. And I think it's just the general frustration that he's feeling. Obviously, he went to United for trophies. He should have known that maybe Sir Alex Ferguson wasn't going to be there for that long. But at the same time, you know, I don't think anybody kind of necessarily was jumping, chomping at the bit to play for David Moyes when, you know, your last manager was one of the greatest ever.
But who would have been? I mean, who would have stepped in and players would have gone, well, that's a step up.
There is no real replacement for Sir Alex Ferguson. You know, even if you went with the Mourinho and Ancelotti, you know, things, big names like that, it's never going to be Sir Alex Ferguson. It was his club. And, you know, I think I can honestly kind of take myself back a little bit and appreciate the general time that it takes a club to kind of reorganize itself and kind of come out of an entire period of time, really. You know, the Sir Alex Ferguson, you know, there's going to be like an ASAF kind of period for Manchester United. And, you know, that's going to come with some growing pains. This is the year of growing pains. I know it's no title, no League Cup, no FA Cup, no Champions League, potentially no Champions League next year. This is looking very bleak, but you got to grow somewhere. And unfortunately, it's, you know, right now it's David Moyes. And yeah, I'm not sure if he does make you wonder now. I mean, I was willing to kind of give him through the summer juice. I'm very kind of leery of how far out of his depths he is, because it seems like he is struggling left and right.
Well, it has been reported that apparently the Glazers and the other directors at Manchester United are going to be having emergency talks about David Moyes' future. That's coming off a couple of websites rather than the English press papers this morning. That there will be kind of crisis talks regarding David Moyes' future. I mean, I think a lot of it, you know, Van Persie criticising his teammates and stuff, I think the fact that Van Persie's talking about players running into my spaces and whatnot shows how disorganised United's style of play is. I mean, if you didn't see it already on the pitch, to have a player like Van Persie who, you know, last year seemed to just know his role, know where he needed to be, right place at the right time, and he was there so often, and that's what won them the championship. For him to say this, I think only highlights that there is such little structure and cohesion in United's style of play. And again, you saw it last night, and that needs to be addressed. And Moyes isn't a tactician. I mean, I said as well at the beginning of the season when Moyes was brought in, I said that this is the guy who is end up going to be like the sacrificial lamb. He's going to be the scapegoat for this United side, because whoever comes in, it's almost impossible to replace Sir Alex Ferguson. And if Moyes doesn't do well, he's going to be kind of strung up, seen off, and they'll bring in somebody else. And it's exactly what's happened. You know, maybe Ferguson did make a mistake in who to hire. In supporting Moyes coming into Old Trafford, and I think it is maybe getting to a time where they should cut their losses. You know, I really like David Moyes. I really like how he did work with Everton. But even now, you're seeing that Martinez has done a better job with Everton than Moyes did. How much of that is down to, you know, the input of players like Lukaku who are on loan? You know, you can argue. And I, to be honest, I don't think it is so much all about Romelu Lukaku that Everton find themselves in such a great position at the moment in the Premiership. And maybe this United job was just that little bit too much for him. And to be honest, you look at somebody like Martinez, maybe he was the man who United should have looked at for bringing into Old Trafford. You know, sure, would have had them playing that exquisite passing style of football that players and United fans it kind of expect to see from Manchester United.
Saying that, Juice, I do kind of wonder what the odds are on like the next manager. Surely there's already talk. And I mean,
Gus Hiddink's been hinting that Tottenham are after him all week, and that he could possibly become Tottenham's new manager come the end of this season, and that Sherwood will be gone. You just wonder if Hiddink's name will start to crop up now around this Manchester United job.
Sure.
I mean, yeah. As I say, it was replacing the irreplaceable with Sir Alex Ferguson. Who do you bring in to take on the team and to try and match the success that Sir Alex had? There was nobody who was going to be able to do it. But Moyes, maybe, is just a manager who is a little, you know, out of his depth. And, you know, we've raised that question a number of times. People keep giving him the benefit of the doubt. But last night, it was pretty poor. Let's hear a little bit of what David Moyes had to say, actually, after the game against Olympiakos from last night.
I'm just surprised that I didn't see that level of performance coming. I didn't see that. And I've got to say, you know, I still didn't think that, you know, we were necessarily two goals worse off in the game. You know, we have a shot which gets deflected. But we didn't offer enough on the night to create a goal, really. I take responsibility, it's my team, and I'll always front it up, and that's what it is. We didn't play well tonight, and you know, we have to play better, we can do. And the one good thing is there's still a second game to come.
David Moyes there saying the only good thing to take from it is that they've got a second leg to beat Olympiakos there, which really, when you're looking for positives out of a football game, that's probably not the best one you should lead off with. Well, the only positive is that we've got a second game against them. That's not a positive.
I think you end up going on to say something about the fact that, you know, no disrespect, but we should beat them 2-3-0. And I mean, that again is a bold statement, but I think that's also him trying to kind of raise to the occasion. But that
shows that there is a problem then with the style of football that United are playing. Because if they have the players that should beat somebody like Olympiakos, and take nothing away from Olympiakos yet again, you know, a scrappy first goal, Campbell though with the second's an absolute beautiful strike. And isn't it kind of ironic the man on loan from Arsenal is scoring for Olympiakos against Manchester United? But if they supposedly have a side on paper that should beat this incredible Greek side, and let's, as I say, you know, I've been saying all year, Olympiakos are looking fantastic in the Greek top flight and are dominating that by some way. And there are some decent sides in that league. You know, PAOK Thessaloniki, Panathinaikos, although they've struggled in the last year or so, not having the greatest of seasons right now, but Olympiakos is running away with that league. And I think as well, you know, Moyes, we just heard there, kind of said that, you know, maybe we underestimated it slightly. You know, he wasn't expecting that sort of performance. Now, it's unclear from the audio that we've got whether he's talking about he wasn't expecting that sort of performance from Manchester United or that sort of performance from Olympiakos. And it wouldn't be the first time that he's admitted to being kind of ill-prepared for a team if he was talking about Olympiakos there. It's not going well for him. I mean, he doesn't need people like Roy Keane on national television here in the UK coming out and tearing apart people like Michael Carrick, sure, and saying that there are players that need to be moved on in the summer. We all know that, Keane. There's no need to reiterate that. And what I do find is funny, he's claiming that the English public have been brainwashed into thinking that the Premier League is the world's best. And I think a lot of people get confused and maybe their expectations get raised too much when people say the Premier League's the most entertaining league in the world. Entertaining doesn't mean it's necessarily the best, it just means it provides a lot of entertainment. You know, there is a high quality of football, and as you can see at the moment, we've got a great title race, we've got a great Champions League spot race, and we've got an intriguing yet depressingly busy relegation battle taking place at the moment. And that provides great entertainment, so arguably it is the world's most entertaining league. But I don't think for the last few years now anybody's been saying that the Premier League is the best league in the world, because you look at the teams that have dominated the Champions League over the last few years.
Let me ask you a question, sir. I'm sorry. I apologize for breaking in, but yesterday you did kind of call this out, and I just want to give you the opportunity to maybe stand on a soapbox and take your appreciation some, because you've been very humble about thus far. You kind of said, you warned about this. You predicted that, you know, that Panathinaikos was a team that had the potential to, you know, to score or you know, could topple and crash out Man United in the shape that they are currently in. You hinted at it yesterday. You were a little skeptical about where they're going to come with the goals at, considering Mitroglou, you know, not being there,
and Saviola out injured as well.
Correct. Were you surprised with how they got the goals?
The first one's a bit of a stroke of luck, isn't it? You know, it's a pretty fantastic deflection that gets away from De Gea, and De Gea's got no chance for it. And the second one, again, is a wonderful strike, and I think we're all surprised that an effort like that came in, although the way Olympiacos played last night, you know, they were the dominant side in the game. So I don't think you can be surprised when you watch the game that they ended up winning 2-0 because United just weren't good enough. I'm not going to stand on my soapbox, ref. I'm like Mario Balotelli, you know. I predict sports and talk about sports for a living, damn it. So, you know, me getting my job right is just me doing my job. I shouldn't stand on the soapbox and take all the credit for predicting that United would end up getting beat by Olympiacos. And to be honest, I did actually say that I thought Olympiacos would take a draw and try and grab something at Old Trafford. Now the pressure is on United to come flying out at Old Trafford. Do you think United will? I mean, obviously they'll have to take the game to Olympiacos and they'll have to raise their game to beat them. But do you think that benefits Olympiacos? I'm obviously going into a second leg 2-0 up is a benefit compared to 0-0. But the fact that that United have to come aggressively at Olympiacos, does that benefit Olympiacos, or does that hinder them, do you think? Because there is one like school of thought that will say the counter-attack, therefore, for Olympiacos will be on. They will just have to sit back and soak up pressure. The other school of thought will be, can they sit back and soak up that pressure? United can and do still have the forwards, especially in Van Persie and Rooney, to cause problems. Is that a possibility?
Yeah, I think that's a really big possibility. I mean, obviously, knowing that United are going to be coming at you is a positive. It sets you up for the game plan, I think, very, very easy. I mean, you know exactly what to expect from United. I think that it's also a little bit of a bonus for Panathinaikos, because
Olympiacos.
You know, I'm sorry, Olympiacos. It's the second time I did that today.
No
worries. Olympiacos, because basically they get to. They understand that they're already playing maybe a little bit outside of their norm. I mean, they're lacking chemistry right now, currently in the United form, and the fact that they're going to have to now be asked to do, you know, something more, maybe raise your game, press further, you know, play a different style than the current crazy style that you're currently, you know, in. That might just add to the cracks, you know. It might just add to the pressure, and really bury this United team. I could also see, like you said, there's probably that other school of thought where, you know, maybe the fact that there is such a importance on playing, you know, to attack and to really kind of break down this Olympiacos team. Maybe, just maybe, that team gets organized enough and finds a way to get through. In my opinion, and I hate to sound like this, but I think they should. I think they should. You know, kind of like what David Moyes said, I think that United should be able to beat Olympiacos 2-3 nothing. And that's no disrespect, but that's just how it is.
Should is a big word. I mean, right. you talk about shoulds, Barcelona.
It's also why they're going to be playing this game.
Barcelona should have beaten AC Milan back in the 1994 Champions League final, yet Milan destroyed them 4-0. You know, AC Milan should not have relinquished a 3-goal lead over Liverpool in that Champions League final in Istanbul, yet, corblimey, look what they went and did. Should's a big word that, you know, doesn't really mean anything in football. The thing for me is that, you know, how it's the same way you see a side go 1-0 up in the last 80 minutes. In the last 10 minutes, you know, after 80 minutes or so. Say a plucky youngster in the Champions League, for instance.
I love the plucky kind of players.
Or a small team in the FA Cup, for instance. They go 1-0 up with 10 minutes remaining against a slightly bigger gun. And the big guns then, for 10 minutes, just put on an onslaught, an absolute devastating onslaught for those final 10 minutes and grab two. It's not a scenario that we're not used to seeing. You know, it happens. We've seen it on a number of occasions. This second leg is going to be the equivalent of that, but with United putting on an onslaught for 90 minutes. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's probably going to take for United to get through. So, for me, that's almost a hindrance for Olympiacos, because it's like baiting a beast. Because United is still a beast. It's still a very good football side if they can play together and play in a system. Now, they're not going to be able to create that in 3 weeks, and I doubt in 3 weeks' time we're going to be talking about this wonderful cohesion that suddenly is looking at you, Manchester United. If we are, then, you know, it's a better man than me that predicts that. But I just think that it's going to be difficult for Olympiacos for 90 minutes to be holding off a United side that this is the last chance saloon. If they can't raise their game and pull themselves together for this second leg in 3 weeks' time, then they've got more problems than David Moyes at Manchester United right now. You know, you can talk about the players being unhappy in training, being, you know, lacking that cohesion, about Van Persie's comments, but really, if as a group, get themselves together. And it was interesting, that snippet that we played of Rooney talking before the game about how, oh, we want to go back to Champions League finals, you know, we want to do this, we want to do that. Once you win it, it's never enough to just have one Champions League final win under your belt or this sort of thing. If you're that kind of player, then you don't need a manager to be able to get yourself in shape to get you playing football. If these guys are Manchester United players and are meant to be, you know, some of the smartest footballing brains in world football, as is expected by Manchester United fans, players, coaches, then Olympiacos, for 90 minutes, taking a battering at Old Trafford will be no problem. And it would, if Olympiacos can hold off, fair play to them. But it will still be an extremely difficult task for the Greek side going up to Old Trafford. It's by no means done yet, this fixture. But I think what it has done is just put a huge amount of pressure on Moyes and United once again. As if they weren't under enough, it's absolutely decimated a lot of faith that people have had. And those polls around the internet as well are changing. And, you know, where you initially, at the beginning of the season, is Moyes the right man for United? You know, you're getting like 80% yes, oh, he's great, oh, Ferguson's man to bring in, blah, blah, blah. You know, in November time, mid-November, people then on these polls, is it time to sack David Moyes? No, kind of 60 to 70% of the people saying, no, we shouldn't sack Moyes yet, we should keep going with him, give him faith. Now those polls after last night are starting to twist and turn once again. And at the moment, on a few of them I've seen, you're looking at around 60, 65% of people saying it is now time for United to sack David Moyes, which is a big turnaround considering the faith and the long-term plan that has supposedly been put in by bringing in David Moyes at Manchester United. And it would be very interesting to see if United do become a quick-trigger club like others before in the top flight of the Premier League. You know, you look at Chelsea, you look at Manchester City to an extent, you know, they were very quick to get rid of Mark Hughes and bring in Mancini, and when things started to go bad for Mancini in the league last season, quick to axe him at the end of the year. Obviously didn't have the dressing room either, but it'd be interesting to see if United do become like that as well. Now Sir Alex is gone and now David Moyes is struggling. How far would this patience and faith go with the board at Old Trafford? What were your thoughts as well, Raf, quickly on Dortmund from last night, going to Zenit? What could have been a very difficult game was made to look pretty comfortable thanks to two Lewandowski goals. But if he doesn't get those goals, it's a very, very different tie indeed. Zenit were almost completely outplayed, yet Shatov and Hulk were able to get themselves back into it. I thought Piszczek was very unlucky to have the penalty given against him, but Hulk with a fantastic finish from the penalty spot.
Yeah,
but 3-2 is a different game to 4-2, and especially Zenit really shouldn't have been allowed to get those goals by a Dortmund defence that has been leaky this season.
I'm going to go ahead and take some credit here in saying that I was expecting goals from Dortmund. I was expecting a game of goals is what I think the exact quote was from yesterday, Jesus. So I'm going to take a little bit of credit there, but at the same time, I'm going to hand you back some credit for just telling me, you know what, their defense kind of in shambles, definitely lacking their regular personnel, and also leaking goals. So I think that the 4-2 kind of scoreline was pretty close to what I thought. I was thinking like 2-1 minimum, but I said 2 goals minimum, I think. Almost positive I said that. So, I was impressed by Dortmund and the goals that they scored. Obviously, it helps to score kind of back-to-back opening goals like they did. That definitely helps your cause going away. And then bringing that back home it's not done, Juice. It's not done. They're going to have to pay attention. They're going to have to kind of play through the second leg. But it's quite nice to have those goals.
I just wasn't impressed by Zenit last night at all, really. I found it very... Dortmund were a far better side, yet were still able to concede 2 goals on the night. Yes, as I say, a debatable penalty, I think, was harsh on Piszczek. But I think that, again, it just sums up a little microcosm of what Dortmund have become. In terms of that back four is so susceptible to conceding big goals at big times. Again, as well, you look at the back, the defensive midfield pairing of Kiel and Sahin. And Sahin with a solid game last night. Kiel with very, very shoddy at points in that. You know, it was great to see Grubkreutz, Mkhitaryan, Royce, Lewandowski all playing well, and Lewandowski with 2 great finishes. Royce as well. Unbelievable run for the first goal. And a fantastic finish for Dortmund's second goal last night. But this isn't a Dortmund side that I can see making a Champions League final at all this year. It's gonna meet its maker in the quarterfinals, if not the semi-finals, unless they get a very nice, comfortable draw going through. I.e., they can get somebody like Olympiakos, because I think the rest of the teams in this competition will beat them in the next legs if the teams we're expecting to go through. Atletico Dortmund could be very interesting, but I still think Atletico would have the advantage over Dortmund at this point in time. It's just that back four that needs to shore itself up a bit. And Zenit are still in this one, as I say, and they do have quality in the likes with Rondon, Hulk, Axel Witsel, of course. This isn't a side that should be boo-hooed, but I think going back to Dortmund with this 2-goal lead and 4 away goals as well, I think that's the other thing. You know, it means that Zenit do need to grab 3 in Dortmund, makes it a lot more difficult than maybe a 2-0 win kind of would do. So I think Dortmund have done more than enough to book their place into the quarterfinals of the Champions League. Tonight, 2 cracking games coming up. We touched on these with Graham, but once again, let's have a little run through of Chelsea, Galatasaray, Mancini, the man who was replaced by Mourinho at Inter Milan. And Mourinho, of course, working with Wesley Schneider in their treble win, and Didier Drogba in his time at Chelsea, considers both of them friends. He's been playing the mind games by talking about Mancini builds 5-a-side teams as opposed to Champions League winning sides. Also came out with a very rare, peculiar comment today that was Cesar Azpilicueta, apparently 11
a
of...
Yeah, a team of Azpilicuetas could win the Champions League.
Yeah. I wasn't sure about Mourinho on that one, but he, you know.